Omega-2'nin dersi, cennet cennetçi okaya, çakşı üstünde tanıtlarına çalışmaya, sevgili ve yuma. Sri Chaitanya Vistam, Stapitam Janabitale, Sayan Uvakilamayam, Lalati Sapanantikam. Vanyaca kavadu vyasca, kripesindu bayyavaca, sitram babne duvayca. So the great Rajasriya sacrifice was going to be performed. We read this verse yesterday, but we didn't read the purport. On the day of extracting the soma juice, which is part of the sacrifice, King Yudhisthira properly and very attentively worshipped the priest and the most exalted personalities of the assembly. Susamahita, with careful attention. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, according to the Vedic system, whenever there is an arrangement for sacrifice, the members participating in the sacrifice are offered the juice of the soma plant. The juice of the soma plant is a kind of life-giving beverage. On the day of extracting the soma juice, King Yudhisthira very respectfully received the special priest who had been engaged to detect any mistake in the formalities of sacrificial procedures. The idea is that the Vedic mantras must be enunciated perfectly and chanted with the proper accent. If the priests who are engaged in this business commit any mistake, the checker or referee priest immediately corrects the procedure, and thus the ritualistic performances are perfectly executed. Unless it is perfectly executed, a sacrifice cannot yield the desired result. In this age of Kali, there is no such learned Brahmins or priests available, therefore all such sacrifices are forbidden. The only sacrifice recommended in the sastras is the chanting of the Hare Krishna Sahagya, Sankirtana Prayas, Ijanti Samiras. The members of the assembly then pondered over who amongst them should be worshipped first. This is called the Agra Puja. Agra Arhana Arham. Who deserves to be worshipped first? So this is a formality, but it's not just an etiquette or formality. For the sacrifice to be executed properly, the proper respect has to be shown to the proper person, and then Krishna is satisfied, and then the sacrifice can go well, because the purpose of the sacrifice ultimately is simply to please Krishna. So this is required. So the members of the assembly then pondered over who amongst them should be worshipped first. But since there were many personalities qualified for this honor, Vyasadeva was there, and his father was there, Parasara Muni, and so many rishis were there, and not only that, but Lord Brahma was there, and Lord Shiva was there. So many personalities were qualified for this honor. They were unable to decide. And this was one of the reasons why Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to perform the sacrifice, because he knew who actually would be chosen, and because he knew who the most worshipable person was. And of course, that most worshipable person is? Yes. Why is he the most worshipable person? He's a supreme person. And everyone else gains their worshipableness or power from him. So how do we know this is true? That Krishna is actually the supreme person.
It's written.
It's written. It's written in the Shastra.
Krishna says himself.
Krishna says himself. So many people say themselves. I'm the most worshipful person to worship me.
But he also proves it.
He proves it. They cannot prove it.
It's acknowledged by authorities.
Yeah, acknowledged by authorities. And also when one worships Krishna, one feels happy. I know one person who thought he was the most pious person in the world. In the whole world, he thought. But he only gave 8 lakhs to the temple, so no one else would agree with him. If he would have given more, maybe. Here's what Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book. Another important procedure, extracting of the soma juice, everyone has to be respected. Another important procedure is that the most exalted personality in the assembly of such a sacrificial ceremony is first offered worship. This particular ceremony is called the Agra Puja. Agra means first, and Puja means worship. This Agra Puja is similar to the election of the president. In the sacrificial assembly, all the members were very exalted. Some proposed to elect one person as the perfect candidate for accepting Agra Puja, and others proposed someone else. As the great Acharya Jiva Goswami points out, text 15 of this chapter states that the members of the assembly were not astonished at the opulence of the sacrifice, since they knew that King Yudhisthira was a devotee of Krishna. Still, text 18 now states that the assembly could not select the most deserving candidate for being worshipped first. This indicates that many of the Brahmins present were not fully realized transcendentalists, but they were conventional Brahmanas uncertain of the supreme conclusion of Vedic wisdom. Similarly, Acharya Vishwanath comments that the undecided members of the assembly were the less intelligent ones, and not such exalted personalities as Brahma, Shiva, and Dvapayana Vyasadev, who thought, since today no one is asking our opinion, why should we say anything? Furthermore, here is Sahadev, who is renowned for his sharp skill in analyzing all sorts of circumstances. He can now appoint the person who is to be worshipped first. Only if someone fails to speak or cannot understand the situation will we speak up, despite no one's having inquired from us. What do you think about that way of dealing with things? Because I was reading it, so it was easier for me to follow it. So what the point was that they were thinking, the great exalted personalities such as Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Srila Vyasadeva, they knew who the most qualified person was. So, but no one asked them their opinion. So they thought, anyway, if no one's asking us, we won't speak. Because they didn't have a compulsion to speak. Most people have a compulsion to speak. So, but they didn't. They were self-satisfied. So, but they had something else to say. If the people, the two other points, that Sahadev is here. And Sahadev was very famous for his great discriminatory powers. So he'll say it. So there's no need for us to speak and make the point. But if no one understands, then we'll talk, even though they're not asking us. So that was their mood. So often we like to make the point so everyone will think, oh, very good, very intelligent this person is. So having made up their minds in this way, the greatest personalities remain silent. This is how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur advises us to understand what occurred in the assembly. But Sahadev was there, and Sahadev began to speak. Certainly it is Achyuta, the supreme personality of Godhead and chief of the Yadavas, who deserves the highest position. In truth, he himself comprises all the demigods worshipped and sacrificed, along with such aspects of the worship as the sacred place, the time, and the paraphernalia. So he's the essence. He comprises all the demigods who are worshipped in sacrifice, and also he comprises the aspects of worship as the sacred place, the time, the paraphernalia. He's the essential point of sacrifice. Lord Hari or he calls him Achyuta, the infallible Lord Krishna. Bhagavan, Bhagavan Satvatam Pati. Arhati he, arhati means deserves, he certainly, Achyuta, he means certainly, arhati he Achyuta, Sra Ishkyam, the supreme position. Certainly it is Achyuta, the supreme personality of Godhead, who deserves the supreme position, because he is Bhagavan Satvatam Pati. He's the chief of the Yadus, he's the chief of the Yadus, and he is Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord. So, what happens next? The Sahadev continues to speak. This entire universe is founded upon him, as are the great sacrificial performances. They rest upon him, the universe rests on him, all sacrifices rest on him, and the sacred fires, the oblations, the offerings, and the mantras, they're all acting by his power. Sankhya and yoga both aim towards him, the one without a second. That means he is unequaled. And yoga is the practice, and Sankhya is the philosophy that goes along with yoga. O assembly members, that unborn Lord who relies only or solely, completely on himself, creates, he maintains, and destroys this cosmos by his personal energies. So who else can say that they do that? Who will even say that? Just if a human, ordinary human being says that, it means that he's crazy. O assembly members, that unborn Lord, first of all, he's unborn. He relies only on himself. He is not getting power from anyone else. And by himself, for his own reasons, he creates, he maintains, and destroys this cosmos. Even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva don't do all three. Lord Brahma creates, but he relies on another. And Lord Shiva destroys, but his power is not his own. So Krishna does this, Achyuta, by his personal energies, and thus the existence of this universe depends on him alone. He creates the many activities of this world, and thus by his grace the whole world endeavors for the ideals of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. So all the different procedures and activities on this world, in this world, are coming from him. Therefore, we should give the highest honor to Krishna, the Supreme Lord. If we do so, we will be honoring all living beings and also our own selves. Anyone who wishes the honor he gives to be reciprocated infinitely should honor Krishna. Anyone who wishes the honor he gives to be reciprocated infinitely, such a person should honor Krishna, the perfectly peaceful and perfectly complete soul of all beings, the Supreme Lord, who views nothing as separate from himself. What is the meaning of that? I'll read the verse again and then we'll hear what Prabhupada says. Anyone who wishes the honor he gives to be reciprocated infinitely should honor Krishna, the perfectly peaceful and perfectly complete soul of all beings, the Supreme Lord, who views nothing as separate from himself. So what is the meaning of that? Now that I talked about Brahma and Shiva not wanting to speak, now no one's going to want to talk, maybe. No, this is different.
If you want to give honor to anyone, you should go to that person only who is most highly qualified to reciprocate.
But what did it say about the kind of reciprocation he gives for what you, the honor you give to him? Huh?
Okay.
Not exactly perfect. But he reciprocates infinitely. So what does that mean?
Unlimited reciprocation.
It means you give something. What does he ask for in the Bhagavad Gita? Patram pushpam phalam dharam. Just a leaf, a flower, some fruit or some water. So something that's more or less insignificant, but he reciprocates infinitely with that. He even ultimately gives himself to those devotees who offer them those things with devotion, bhakti, paritam. So whatever you want, he will reciprocate with. And if you want only to please him, I mean, like a good example of him reciprocating amazingly is in the 81st and 82nd chapter of the 10th canto, the story of Sudama Brahmana. So Sudama Brahmana, what did he give Krishna? Where was he from? What was Sudama Brahmana's place, his city, where he lived?
Vrindavan?
Huh?
Vrindavan?
You see Vrindavan in everything. I'll give you a hint. Where Gandhi's ashram is?
Sabarmati.
Porbandar.
My history is bad.
Your history is bad? Because you're a Bombay boy. Actual Gujarati.
And even geography.
Oh. Sudama's house is there. But he was so poor that he had nothing in the house to give to Krishna. So his wife went out and begged some chipped rice, flat rice, which is very meager actually. But 4 palmfuls, and wrapped it in some clean but old cloth. And Sudama took that cloth and carried it with him. And Krishna ended up taking some of that rice, and because Sudama had brought it to him, even though he thought he saw what opulence Krishna was living in Dwarka, and he thought that this is completely not suitable, this is poor man's food. This is suitable for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord, even though he's my friend. So, and he came there because he was so poor. He didn't have enough food to eat or anything, and his wife had sent him because she knew that his friend was the Supreme Lord, because they went to school together at the ashram of Sandipani Muni, their teacher in Avantipur was in. So when Krishna, he took it, and then Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, stopped him from taking any more. And Sudama had come to ask something from Krishna, but actually he had come to see Krishna. So he didn't ask anything from Krishna. And the next day he left, and Krishna didn't say anything, even though he knew why Sudama had come, and he didn't offer him anything. And then when Sudama walked back and he was near his own place, he saw there was a huge palace there, and he saw that his everything had been transformed, and he had attained the wealth of Indra, the king of heaven, in Porbandar. It was no longer Porbandar, it was Rich Bandar, because he was the rich Bandhu of Krishna. And even his own body was transformed into a young, handsome, beautiful man, and so was his wife, etc. So Krishna, he gave something so insignificant to Krishna, but the reciprocation was infinite, practically speaking. So what we want from Krishna, he'll give us. But if we only want him, he will even give himself to the devotee. So when Sahadeva was saying, so he's obviously the person to worship. He's the Supreme Lord. He creates everything. He destroys everything all by his own energy. He relies on no one else. He is the one who's independent. Everyone else is ultimately dependent on him. So that's the definition of the Supreme. that he is the one whom everything else depends upon. Everyone is maintained by him, ultimately. He is the only one who is independent. Everything else depends on him, rests upon him. So Sahadev spoke in this definitive way about Krishna. So having said this, Sahadev, who understood Krishna's power, he fell silent. And having heard his words, all the saintly persons present congratulated him for coming to the right conclusion, and they said, Sadhu, Sadhu, it means excellent, or very good, very good. The king, Maharaja Yudhisthira, was delighted to hear this pronouncement of the Brahmanas, from which he understood the mood of the entire assembly. Overwhelmed with love, he fully worshipped Lord Krishna, the master of the senses, Rishikesh. After bathing Lord Krishna's feet, and this was one of the main reasons why Yudhisthira was holding the Rajasuya sacrifice, so in the presence of all these exalted persons, the conclusion would be reached that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. After bathing Lord Krishna's feet, Maharaj Yudhisthira joyfully sprinkled the water upon his own head, and then upon the heads of his wife, brothers, other family members, and ministers. That water purifies the whole world. What other water has touched the lotus feet of the Lord? Ganga. What panel is that? Two and three? That it shows the descent to all the different places. Mm. And you have good photos for that?
Yeah, from LinkedIn.
Yeah. Gomukh?
Yeah, there are a few. Please show the places of
Gangotri?
Gangotri? It's in the Himalaya. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the first stop after Gomukh. So that water is so pure and so holy because it has touched the lotus feet of the Lord. So, after bathing Lord Krishna's feet, what did Maharaj Yudhisthira do? He took the water and he sprinkled it on his own head, then upon the heads of his wife. So, so much respect for the water that has washed Krishna's feet. So he was so happy because this was one of the main purposes of him performing the sacrifice. And then upon his other family members and the ministers, he was blessing everyone, and they were happy to be blessed by the water that had washed the lotus feet of Krishna. That water purifies the whole world. As he honored the Lord with presentations of yellow silk garments and precious jeweled ornaments, the king's tear-filled eyes prevented him from looking directly at the Lord. So part of the ceremony is they washed his feet. Then they presented him yellow silk garments, precious jewels, ornaments. And he was so thrilled to be worshipping Krishna in this way. When they saw Lord Krishna thus honored, nearly all who were present joined their palms reverentially and exclaimed, Jai, Jai! Obeisances to you, all victory to you. Namo Jayati Namustam Itam Sabha Jitam Viksha. Upon seeing Krishna honored in this way, all Pranjalayat Jana, all the people, Nama, he said, Nama, obeisances to you, Jai, all victory to you, Iti. Then they bowed down to Krishna, Tam Nipatu, Pushpa, Vrishpa. And they showered him with flowers. And flowers rained down from above. That means that there was an approval from because flowers came from all the demigods agreeing that Krishna was that person. So the atmosphere was so sweet and wonderful because Krishna was worshipped. But There was a problem. You know what that problem was? Shishupala. Shishupala. He was very upset with Krishna. He was born angry at Krishna. But then also, he was completely smitten with love for Rukmini before she was married, and Rukmini's brother, whose name was Rukmi, had arranged that Rukmini marry Sisupal. But the last person in the whole world that Rukmini wanted to marry was Sisupal. In fact, she only wanted to marry one person, and she would not marry anyone else. And she decided that if she could not marry Krishna, who she fell in love with just by hearing about him, or Krishna, from Narada, who visited the palace of King Bhishmaka occasionally and spoke about Krishna to everyone, and Rukmini heard and she fell in love with him. And she decided that if she couldn't marry Krishna, she would not be touched by any other man. She would just fast, perform austerities, and give up her life. And if she couldn't marry Krishna in this life, her hope was to marry him in some future life by performing austerities for a thousand, thousands of births. Tam satam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam gatanam parada daivatainam ayasitaram narapangavena sakyam vicharu krita punya punya. It takes thousands of births, perhaps, to gain the association of Krishna. And Rukmini was so fixed in performing the necessary punya or austerities and gaining the piety to be with Krishna, marry Krishna, that she was ready to fast again and again, birth after birth, perform austerities, and she would not accept anyone else. In other words, she was ready to die as Krishna rather than accept the hand of Sisupal. So Sisupal all the enmity he had with Krishna was compounded by Krishna stealing away Rukmini from him, and Krishna didn't even care. And then all the armies went to capture Rukmini back and punish Krishna from doing this, and the Yaru the armies of the Yadus defeated them, headed by Balaram. And then Rukmi himself went out and said, I will not come back to my capital city of Kandina unless I bring back Krishna. I'm promising you are all cowards. You ran away. And they all ran away, and they came back. Because they were so soundly defeated, they thought, wait a second, we're going out to fight for Sisupal, and he didn't even come out and fight. He's just sitting there. Krishna took Rukmini. Crying. So Sisupal, he was so inimical with Krishna, actually. And there's something to do with his birth. I don't know the story exactly how described in the Mahabharata, that he was born with how many eyes?
Three eyes,
four, and he had a horrible cry like a donkey or something like that. So, and then his auntie, his mother, who was Krishna, a relative of Krishna, Krishna's auntie, somehow Krishna promised, you know the story? Krishna promised her that she said, don't kill him, you know, don't kill him, please don't kill him. So he promised that he would tolerate 1,000 insults or something from him.
She said by someone that if she puts Sisupal on the lap of the man who will kill him, his extra eye and extra arms will go away. So she was putting him on kinds of people.
Yes, that's it.
One day she put him in Krishna's lap, and then eye and arms disappeared, and she promised, asked him to promise not to kill him. And he said that he won't kill him until he insulted him, I don't know, I think 100 times or something.
Yeah. So he was going to begin.
And Krishna was just smiling. That's 4, 5, 27, 38, 92. That's 8 more.
So the son of Dhammaghosa, who is Sisuphal, became infuriated. What does infuriated mean? Fury means great anger. So he became filled with fury or great anger upon hearing the glorification of Krishna's transcendental qualities, and everyone so happy. So he was so envious of Krishna. He was so envious of Krishna, and that caused him to always be thinking about Krishna. Because when you're angry at someone or envious of someone, your mind becomes so focused on that person. So this is described in the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, that this is the process, not that the devotees aspire for, is to focus the mind on Krishna somehow or another. Not to become envious of Krishna or to become angry at Krishna or fearful of Krishna like Kamsa was, or envious like Sisuphal, but the point being that somehow or another we should concentrate our minds on Krishna. This is the essence of bhakti, especially spontaneous devotional service. But Sisuphal, he stood up hearing when Krishna was glorified. He stood up from his seat and became angry, and he was waving his arms to attract everyone's attention. And he fearlessly spoke to the entire assembly the following harsh words against the Supreme Lord. So we'll read the purport here, and there's something very interesting that the purport contains, especially the words of Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. Srila Prabhupada writes, in that meeting, King Sisuphal was also present. He was an avowed enemy of Krishna for many reasons, especially because of Krishna's having stolen Rukmini from their marriage ceremony. Therefore, he could not tolerate such honor to Krishna, and he could not tolerate the glorification of Krishna's qualities. Instead of being happy to hear the glories of the Lord, he became very angry. He stood up and he waved his arms, so everyone just stared at him and stopped looking at Krishna. He got everyone's attention, then he began to speak. But here's what Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's comment. Speak very harshly. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur mentions that the reason Sisuphal did not object when Sahadev proposed Krishna for the Agra Puja is that Sisuphal wanted to ruin King Yudhisthira's sacrifice. Because we should note that they were deciding who the Agra Puja was meant for, and everyone agreed that it was going to be given to Krishna. And then everyone worshipped Krishna, Yudhisthira worshipped Krishna. And then, and only then, after the ceremony was completed, that's when Sisuphal stood up and began causing a parliament scene. Because if Sisuphal had argued earlier against Lord Krishna's receiving the first worship, and another person had been selected, the sacrifice would have proceeded normally. Therefore, Sisuphal allowed Krishna to be selected. He waited until the worship was over, and then he spoke up, hoping in this way to demonstrate that the sacrifice was not spoiled, was now spoiled, because the wrong person had been chosen, because he was envious not only of Krishna, but he was also envious of Yudhisthira. Because the essence of envy is envy of Krishna. And if we're envious of Krishna, we'll be envious of so many other people too, anyone who has more than us. So Yudhisthira was going to be the emperor. And Sisuphal didn't like this at all. So he was even hoping that a fight would start. And then when Kshatriyas fight, someone will pull out a sword, someone will shoot someone, and there'll be blood, and the blood in the sacrificial arena would contaminate it, and then the whole sacrifice would be ruined, either by them agreeing that Krishna shouldn't have been worshipped actually, or the, and now the sacrifice has been spoiled, or blood spilled in the sacrificial arena. So his hope was also to ruin the sacrifice. Thus he would ruin the endeavor of Maharaj Yudhisthira. In this regard, the Acharya quotes the following smriti reverence. Apuja yatra pujanti pujanam cha vitikrama. In the place where those who are not to be worshipped are worshipped, there is offense to those who are actually worshipable. There is also the following statement. Pati vannatihi streya puja puja vyatikrama. Improperly understanding who is to be worshipped and who is not to be worshipped will impede one's progress in life. So Shishupal, this is what he said. The statement of the Vedas that time is the unavoidable controller of all has indeed been proven true, since the intelligence of wise elders has now become diverted by the words of a mere boy. Okay, what did he say? Here. There's two parts. The statement of the Vedas that time is the unavoidable controller of all has now been proven true. What does he mean by that? Because this has been said a few times already, this point. What does he mean by that?
Time is up.
Not exactly.
Time is going to kill everyone.
Not exactly. But that by the power of time, something that shouldn't have happened can happen just because it's the time. Something that shouldn't have happened, that couldn't have happened, has happened because it's just what happened. It's time, fate. So time makes everything happen. So he's saying that even though something shouldn't have happened, wise people have listened to this boy, this young boy Sahadev, because usually it's the boys who are supposed to listen to the wise elders. But in this case, look what has happened. The wise elders have listened to the young boy. So this proves that time is more powerful than anything, because at this particular time, something that shouldn't have happened. So time rules. Time rules everything. Since the intelligence of wise elders have now become diverted by the words of a mere boy, Sahadev, he's not wise. So time has made something ridiculous happen. The influence of time. O leaders of the assembly, you know best who is a fit candidate for being honored. Therefore, you should not heed the words of a child when he claims that Krishna deserves to be worshipped. How can you pass over, huh?
That's one or two.
Here we go. Anyway, you can count. You can be the referee. How can you pass over the most exalted members of the assembly, topmost sages, who are dedicated to the absolute truth? They are endowed with power of austerity, divine insight, and strict adherence to severe vows, sanctified by knowledge and worshipped even by the rulers of the universe. How does this cowherd boy, the disgrace of his family, how does he deserve your worship? Does a crow deserve to eat the sacred rice cakes that are being offered in a sacrifice? Krishna is like a crow. So, look how he was speaking. The great commentator, Sridharaswami, this is the purport, has analyzed Sisopal's words as follows. The term Gopal means not only cowherd, but also protector of the Vedas and the earth. Pala means protector also. So what the acharyas do, very often they call it, by the mercy of Saraswati, there is a second meaning to what this criticizer is saying. And the second meaning is a meaning that actually is the opposite of the first meaning, and it glorifies where the first meaning of Sisupal or others are attempting to criticize by breaking the words and understanding them differently, the opposite meaning comes. So here Sridhar Swami is going to show how Sisupal, by the mercy of Saraswati, the goddess of learning, he's actually glorifying Krishna. The term Gopal means not only coward, but also? There's a term that comes up very often, Ditpal, means the protector of all the directions. Similarly, Kula Pamsana means, it has a double meaning. Sisupal intended it to mean the disgrace of his family, which is its meaning when divided as above, but the word may also be analyzed as Kulapam Amsana as opposed to Kulapamsana, because in Sanskrit you can break up the sandhi or the combination of the words differently. Giving it a totally different meaning. Kulapam indicates one who indicates those who prattle with crooked words contrary to the Vedas, and Amsana, derived from the word Amsayati, means destroyer. In other words, he was praising Lord Krishna as he who vanquishes the misguided and frivolous speculations about the nature of truth. Similarly, though Sisupal wanted to compare Krishna to a crow with the word yata kaka, these words may also be divided yata akaka, because the word has a long A, so that A, yata, the A can also go to the second word, kaka. In that case, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, the word kaka is a combination of ka and akka, which indicates material happiness and misery. Thus, Lord Krishna is akaka in the sense that he is beyond all material misery and happiness, being on the pure transcendental platform. Finally, Sisupal was right in saying that Lord Krishna does not deserve merely the Purudasa rice cakes offered to the lesser demigods as a substitute for the heavenly beverage of Soma. In fact, Lord Krishna deserves to receive everything that we possess, since he is the ultimate proprietor of everything, including ourselves. Thus, we should give Lord Krishna our life and soul, not merely a ritualistic offering of rice cakes. So the acharyas love to do this.
But again,
he didn't mean those things. But definitely, Sisupal was envious of him, for sure. But the goddess Saraswati entered his tongue and changed his words to have positive meanings, even though he meant them in a negative way. That's the idea. Allowed there to be a positive glorify, because she's a devotee of Krishna, she wants Krishna only to be glorified. How, he continues, how does one who follows no principles of the social and spiritual orders or principles of family ethics, he's killed them. His own uncle, he's so bad, he's killed his own uncle, who has been excluded from all religious duties, who behaves whimsically, steals, dances with the wives of others, who has had no good qualities, how does such a person deserve to be worshipped? See the Prabhupada comments. Actually, Krishna does not belong to any caste, nor does he have to perform any occupational duties. It is stated in the Vedas that the Supreme Lord has nothing to do with his prescribed duty. Whatever has to be done on his behalf is executed by his different energies. Sisupal indirectly praised Krishna by saying he is not within the jurisdiction of the Vedic injunctions. This is true because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That he has no qualities means that Krishna has no, because he said that he has no good qualities. He has no qualities. Means he has no material qualities. He has no good qualities. He has no bad qualities. He has no rajagun, sattvagun. He's transcendental. Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He acts independently. Yes. He doesn't care for the conventions of social or religious principles. He does as he likes. Sisupal continued. Yayati cursed the dynasty of these Yadavas, and ever since then they have been ostracized, thrown out by honest men, and they have been addicted to liquor. How then does Krishna deserve to be worshipped? Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives the inner meaning of the words of Sisupal to show how he continued unintentionally glorifying Lord Krishna and his Yadav dynasty. Even though the Yadavas were cursed by Yayati, they have been relieved of this curse by great saints. And consequently, they have been raised to a position of royal sovereignty by such persons as Kartavirya. That was all mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Kartavirya Arjuna. Thus they have become absorbed in Pana, protecting the earth. Considering all this, how does Krishna, the chief of the Yadavas, deserve useless worship? Rather, he deserves opulent worship. These Yadavas. Have abandoned the holy lands inhabited by saintly sages. Like, where were they living before? Mathura. And they have instead taken shelter of a fortress in the sea, a place where no Brahminical principles are observed. There, just like thieves, they harass their subjects. He's gathering momentum. He's not only criticizing Krishna, his family, everyone. Purport. The word Brahmarshi Sevitam Deshan, holy lands inhabited by saintly sages, allude to the district of Mathura. So the Prabhupada writes, Sisupal went crazy because of Krishna's being selected the supreme first worship person in that meeting, and he spoke so irresponsibly that it appeared that he had lost all his good fortune and he was going to very soon lose his life and his head. Sukadev Goswami continued, bereft of all good fortune, Sisupal spoke these and other insults. So only some of them are recorded, so we're not going to be able to count them because that was probably just 20 there. But he might have accumulated some previously too. But the Supreme Lord said nothing. Just as a lion ignores a jackal's cry. Have you ever heard a jackal? Where?
Yeah.
In Mayapur. In so many.
In so many halls.
Huh?
In so many halls.
Really? Where do they live?
In the forest.
In the forest.
Oh, in the forest there.
In the background, yeah.
You know, everyone lives there. There's horses, there's cows, there's pigs, there's jackals. No monkeys, though. What to do? Are the cows and horses live there? Are they wild?
No.
Yeah. Or they belong to people?
They are herded.
Yeah. But it's funny when you're walking through the forest and you see the herd of horses just wandering around. Big ones. Those are the Arab.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, but Krishna just stood there, just as a lion ignores a jackal's cry. 85, 86, 87. The jackal says, oh, but a lion, it's completely different. Upon hearing such intolerable blasphemy of the Lord, several members of the assembly covered their ears and walked out, angrily cursing the king of Chedi. Because anyone who fails to immediately leave the place where he hears criticism of the Supreme Lord or his faithful devotees, as the verse, will certainly fall down, bereft of his pious credits. Then the sons of Pandu became furious, and together with the warriors of the Matsya, Kaikeya, and Srinjaya clans, they rose up from their seats with weapons poised, ready to kill Sisupal. So Sisupal was, there was going to be bloodshed, and that was going to ruin the sacrifice. But undaunted, he didn't care. He was so angry and so envious. Sisupal then took up his own sword and his shield in the midst of all the assembled kings, O Bharata, and he hurled insults at those who sided with Lord Krishna. At that point, the Supreme Lord stood up and he checked his devotees. He then angrily sent forth his razor-sharp Sudarshan Chakra and severed the head of his enemy as he was attacking. So he raised his sword and shield. He was attacking Krishna. Purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains the Lord's action as follows. If Lord Krishna had done nothing, there probably would have been a savage fight on the sacrificial ground, and thus the whole ceremony would have been drenched in blood, spoiling the sanctified atmosphere. Therefore, in order to protect the Rajasuya sacrifice of Krishna's beloved devotee Yudhisthira, the Lord immediately severed Sisupal's head with his razor-sharp disc in such a way that not a drop of blood fell within the sacrificial ground. So it appeared like Krishna was angry at Sisupal and killed him because Sisupal was attacking him and Sisupal had insulted him and Krishna was getting his revenge. But actually what was in Krishna's mind, because he could have let the devotees kill him too, but what was in Krishna's mind was to protect his devotee, Yudhisthira. So Krishna's mind is very hard to understand, and Krishna's mind is always wonderful, and it is always dominated by his desire to exchange loving affection with his devotees and to protect his devotees. Kavya Pratizanihi Name Bhakti Pranasati. So when we actually hear about how Krishna acts, then gradually our trust in Krishna, because everyone in this world is shelterless, in fact. Everyone in the material world is shelterless and hurting because of the lack of shelter. The loneliness, the fear, the anxiety because of their lack of shelter. Everyone experiences this. Some are better at making believe that their life is wonderful and everything, but actually no one's life is wonderful. Everyone's life is going to end, and even before, and so many people, everyone who we love, life is going to end. So it's not a pleasant position to be in the material world, and because of illusion, and our desire to be independent from Krishna, we see, we allow ourselves to be forgetful, and that's the mercy of Maya. Because of our desires, we don't want to be aware of the realities of the situation. So Krishna allows his maya, or we invite his maya in one sense, because we want to be unaware of reality. We forget our shelterlessness. And therefore, at the time of death, all the illusion of our vulnerable position is stripped away, and there we are. And it's terrifying. Terrifying, because we see clearly that we have no shelter. There's an old saying that there are no atheists in the foxholes, meaning when you're in a battle and fighting the soldiers, they all very quickly turn theistical. and they also turn to sense gratification too, but they turn theistical because they know that they could actually die. So we need a shelter, and when we hear of the qualities of Krishna and his dealings with his devotees, how his mentality is to care for his devotees in such a way, and when he does things, it's for the pleasure of his devotees. When we hear that, it gives us strength and courage and faith that we also should, we could become devotees. We should become devotees because Krishna takes us care of his devotees. And then we start. And Jiva Goswami actually says that the beginning of bhakti, it starts with a doubt. Bhakti starts with a doubt. What is the doubt? We hear the stories, we listen to the devotees, and we start thinking, maybe it's real. Maybe there is a Krishna there. Maybe there is someone who's going to take care of me if I surrender to him. Maybe it's true. Maybe the devotees are right. So it starts with that doubt. And that's the beginning. So that, so Krishna killed Shishupala in such a way because Krishna has unlimited power, unlimited intelligence. So he does things so that many purposes are satisfied at once. So he killed Shishupala in such a way that that there was not a drop of blood was spilled. And he was also, it sounds like he was inimical to Shishupala, but actually he wasn't even inimical to Shishupala. He was actually sending Shishupala home because he was there was the curse, which is described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. By the gatekeepers were cursed by the four Kumaras to have to take birth, and they had accepted the curse of the four Kumaras, but they said only one request: please don't let us forget the Lord, let us always be fixed in remembrance of him. So because of Sisupal's envy, because of Ravana's fear and envy, and because of Aranyakashipu's envy, and anger, they were fixed in deep and full remembrance of Krishna. So what happened next? When Sisupal was thus killed, a great roar and howl, went up from the crowd. That was supposed to come from you, instead it came from me. Taking advantage of that disturbance, the few kings who were supporters of Sisupal quickly left the assembly out of fear for their lives. Whoops. An effulgent light rose from Sisupal's body. And as everyone watched, that light entered Lord Krishna, just like a meteor falling from the sky to the earth, went into Krishna's body. So this was seen by the whole seventh canto of the Bhagavatam as an explanation of that verse, because Yudhisthira saw it and he said, how come Sisupal, his soul went into the body of Krishna? Whole seventh canto is an explanation of that. Okay, so tomorrow, Krishna willing, we'll continue. We'll read a little purport to that verse. And we should continue. That was the 45th verse. And the chapter is almost finished. And then, I think before, so must we will even finish the next chapter. Any question?
This is Chaim Vijay were promised to come back to the spiritual world. And here it's described that he goes into Krishna's body, which is considered a very low or very even abominable
It was just an exit, a grand exit. That wasn't the end. And also, no one should have been able to see this either, because it was on the spiritual level. Same thing happened with Agasura. Agasura's soul went into the body of Krishna, and Brahma saw that. But in the presence of everyone, that means that Krishna wanted to see everyone to see this, so that they. It's also, in one sense, a chastisement of the Brahmavadis, the Mayavadis, as if the demons appear to get Sayuja Mukti merged into the body of Krishna, and this is what they're trying, performing all the austerities to get. It doesn't seem like a proper. Proper goal. This is just what they perceived, but then more. Okay.
Jai Vijay came back and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu still as Jagai Madai.
You've heard that. I think it's in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. I can't remember exactly reading it, but maybe.
That was the fourth, because then they become devotees. That was the fourth birth.
That's what it is. If I remember correctly, it's that we know. They were terrible. But they didn't blaspheme the devotees like he did. That was the one thing that they had one good quality, and that was a negative, that what they didn't do. They didn't blaspheme, criticize the Vaishnavas. They did every other terrible thing, but not that, and therefore Mahaprabhu could face them and save them. But I can't remember if I've read that in Chaitanya Bhagavat. I can't remember that.
I think Kesha Prabhu was quoted a couple of times.
Yeah. But did he give the...
He must have given Bharat Prabhu.
Okay. But that's it's commonly known. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam.